I would love to say that we're live from Benghazi. I would love to say that we're live from the Gaza Strip. Unfortunately, we're in Maine and New Hampshire. Welcome to a Middle Eastern edition of Political QRM.
Welcome, folks, to Political QRM. I am Anne Marie, and Lou is my pal in Maine.
Pal.
Okay. Pal. All right, pal. Friend.
Buddy.
Cugino.
Chump. Goomba.
Yeah, okay, all right. Mideast. Huh?
Mideast. I'm going to preface the entire program by saying that the Mideast has been, the people of the Mideast have been killing each other since the only weapon they had was rocks and camel bones. This is not new.
No, it's not.
Behavior for them people over
no,
there.
No, it's not.
All right.
The weapons have gotten more sophisticated.
The weapons have gotten more sophisticated, but I want to stipulate the fact that they've been killing each other over there since camel bones. And we can move the line of technology from there.
Okay, so Israel has been attacked from Gaza.
Again and again.
Actually, this has been going on for quite a while.
Yes.
You know,
it never actually truly stopped.
Right. The press has not made a big deal about it because they really don't give a darn about Israel.
Well, no. They don't, not only don't give a darn, they didn't want the issue raised during election cycle.
Of course. But now it has escalated. 75,000 reservists in Israel have been called mm-hmm. up, and Benjamin Netanyahu is considering a ground war. Yes, so they're looking upon that, and of course they're getting the little scolding from, like, say, oh, Britain. Well, gee, you know, if you invade Gaza, it would cost the country international support. And it's like,
I will be blatantly, screamingly honest here. When I read across the front of about four news tickers that the White House actually said that Israel has a right to defend itself against Hamas, I almost literally fell down.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on there.
I the fact that the White House actually elucidated that almost dropped me like the proverbial rock.
Well, you know, we could look at it as that the White House is just going to say, Israel, this is yours. And they're not going to touch it. They're not going to touch it, though. That's
which
the thing.
Is what we said, yes, but which is what we said in 1967 during Milham et Shehet.
Right.
You know, I mean, during that time, we basically said the same thing to them. And hey, Arabs, remember what happened that time in 6 days?
Yeah. I know.
You lost.
You lost, yes.
Badly.
Yep.
In 6 days.
In 6 days, exactly.
This time it'll take 6 seconds.
Yeah. No, I know. I don't understand the White House's comments, though, because they have been basically, I know, they've been disrespecting Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu for the past 2.5 years. Now, all of a sudden, they're on their side?
Oh, they, Obama 1.0 was nothing but disrespect for Israel. Here we are in 2.0. He's done, he did almost nothing to, not so much disrespect, but to respect Israel. Now, all of a sudden, and I don't know, I mean, the White House says that Israel has a right to defense, but does that directly come from, you know, the president's lips or mind or whatever? Or does that come from, taking a poll of the employees? You know, they cross side and they say, you know, they go down to the kitchen, hey, guys, what do you think?
What do you think? Yeah. You know,
and then they go down to the linen laundry, and hey, what do you guys think? Oh, well, you know.
Gardeners and everything else.
The gardeners who were taking care of Michelle Obama's garden there. And,
yeah, right. Yeah, I know. God forbid. You know, she only gets her hands dirty for photo ops.
So I don't know what it means that the White House said that Israel has a right to self-defense. I don't know. Can you help me with that?
I honestly think that this is for public consumption. This is what this comment is. This is for public consumption. And behind the scenes, they're saying something else to Hamas and the rest of the people. I honestly think so. This is just to allay the fears of Israeli supporters in the United States.
And all the Jews that voted for it.
Exactly. I don't trust this man. I'm sorry. Anybody who thinks that, you know, he's had a revelation on how to treat Israel, I don't think so.
Follow the money.
Yeah, exactly.
Follow the money, because his mouth may be saying Israel has a right to self-defense, but watch who's funding whom by virtue of multinational corporations, and all of a sudden millions of dollars funneled into Hamas, Hezbollah.
Exactly. You know, and in the past, I mean, what? He's supposed to have Morsi over, or has he already had him? I don't know.
I can't remember. I just feel at this point, Baruch Hashem, and I, you know, the IDF, yes. Because, you know, it's just...
Exactly.
How the hell did these people get me from saying things in Italian to getting me to saying things in Hebrew?
Bro, I know. Yeah.
It's bad enough the way I murder Italian.
No, you don't murder Italian. You speak Italian very well. I'm the one that murders it.
Rabbi Lenny, if you catch this one, please. I can't help it. Hey, listen, not for nothing, Rabbi Lenny, but I murder Hebrew every badly as you murder Italian, so we're even, all right?
Oh, no, you're kidding. He tries to speak Italian?
Oh, tries nothing. He does a very good job.
Oh, does he? Oh, excellent. Like I said, he probably speaks Italian better than I do, yeah.
He's from Bay Ridge. For heaven's sake.
Okay.
He speaks English, he speaks Italian.
Well, I hope he speaks English.
Oh, yeah, but Yiddish, Hebrew, Spanish, probably if I had to add it up, probably six or seven languages.
Mm, wow.
I mean, not all of them, you know, all that well, but...
So...
Actually, my Hebrew's probably not as bad as my Yiddish. But anyway, so... Follow the money. Nobody can tell me a valid reason to trust 2.0 of an administration I didn't trust 1.0 of.
Exactly. And plus everything, I mean, come on, look what just happened in Benghazi with, you know, him not sending help and then him lying about it. And then this little farce about when one of the reporters asked him at his quote unquote press conference, about Susan Rice, and then he came out and he started attacking McCain. Well, you know, if he has something to say, you know, I'm here.
No. This stuff is a matter of record, not just a matter of public record, which if you go Google it, it's out there, but it's a matter of you can find the tapes, people.
Yeah.
You can find the transcripts. You can find the tapes of the press conferences. You can find, you know, copies of the memo from day one to day now. You can find all this stuff. It's not a question of he said, she said anymore.
No,
the documents are there.
Yes. But
speaking of she said, what the hell was she saying anything?
Yeah. No, but you know what? The thing is that when he came out and he started talking, and you know, berating McCain and Graham for picking on Susan Rice. And the thing is that the GOP didn't get it. They were trying to...
Well, the GOP hasn't gotten anything in a long time.
Jeez Louise, I know. But, you know, they were trying to deflect attention off of Benghazi onto some stupid little war on women crap again, okay?
Yep.
And they succeeded. And it's ridiculous. You know what they should have done? They should have gotten Kelly Ayotte, shoved her in front of the camera, and had her say, excuse me, women can take care of themselves. God forbid.
Yeah, I think, and you know what? And I'm going to use that line. I promise I use. You know, Kelly Ayotte would have been perfect. Oh my goodness.
Brain dead.
Huh?
Brain dead. What?
No, not brain. Yeah, not even brain. Effluvial brain dead. Yes. Nikki Haley.
Oh yeah.
And even that little girl who dabbled in witchcraft from Delaware.
Oh yeah.
Remember her?
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
Oh, God, she was cute as a button.
Yes, she was.
And get those three women in there and line Obama, Hillary, Susan Rice, and for that matter, you know what, while we're at it, throw Pelosi in there because she's deserved it for years.
Oh, my God.
Line them up and have those three women slap them like Mo slapped Larry, Curly, Shemp, and Curly Joe. Bang, bang, bang. You know, just like that. War on women. Here's your war on women.
Yeah, no, so they're trying to deflect. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I just don't know. And the GOP's doing crap.
They're doing nothing. They're doing, you know, the GOP is paying it every bit as much, quote unquote, lip service as the left, as the mainstream media. It's all lip service.
Yeah.
I don't know how far the American people are willing to let this go. I mean, we have a secession movement right now, which I'll get into next week because of Scalia's comments on that. But, we have a secession movement, we have a Tenth Amendment movement, we have a lot of movements. We also have an impeachment movement.
Yeah.
That is actually moving, and don't be terribly surprised. They can't use Benghazi as a motivation, but they can use everything else. And no, wait, they might be able to, because you know what? The fact that Benghazi took place at a consulate, which is technically United States soil,
yes,
which technically makes it a domestic issue.
Yes, it does. Yeah, because that is sovereign territory.
That's right, sovereign territory. So don't be surprised if Benghazi isn't issue number one.
It has to be. At this point, I think it should be. I don't know. I mean, and now with this Petraeus thing. Okay, fine. He testified that, yes, he saw it as a terrorist attack. Good. Sent everything to the White House. And now they're saying, well, the White House didn't change anything, or maybe they might have changed something. No, they didn't change it. No. They didn't change the terror delete. Okay, so then where did it get deleted?
Probably just got to be a corrupted file going from computer to computer.
Yeah, right, baloney.
Yeah, it got corrupted, all right.
Yeah.
But not by the computers.
No. Personally, okay, so say the White House didn't do it, okay? And this is what they were going on. I would actually point to one person, National Security, what's his name? Is it Clapper? Yeah, James Clapper. Yeah, paying the button.
James Clapper.
Yeah, Clapper, who can't remember, who didn't know half the things that were going on as far as, you know, world affairs and everything. So
let me expound on that a little bit.
What?
Okay, Secretary Rice.
Yeah.
Ambassador Rice.
Yeah.
She's not there, she's an ambassador.
No, yeah.
Ambassador Rice, Clapper, and whoever corrupted that file.
Mm-hmm.
Should not only be fired, but as far as I'm concerned, because this did take place on sovereign soil, treason.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I agree on that one.
And I'm one of the few words who waves the T word around every once in a while, and because my opinion on the T word goes all the way back to Jane.
Yeah.
Got to remember, you can see it, the pardon me. The listeners can't see it, but behind me on a wall is my hunting rifle. It is a 1942 Soviet-made Mosin Nagant 9130. Now, I name all of my firearms. I'm one of those guys. I name all my cars, too, so don't, you know. But I don't name my computers. But I do name my firearms. That weapon's name is Jane.
Uh-oh.
Go figure why, right? In the meantime,
go ahead.
I still wave the T word around. And in case you haven't been paying attention, folks, the T word is treason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aiding, abetting, and giving comfort to an enemy of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see, and anybody that has altered anything in the intel about Benghazi is a traitor to the United States of America.
Yep.
Should be handled as such.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think that it was Clapper. He's a director of national intelligence, because anything from the agencies would go to him.
That's right.
And then they would it would be dissemination.
CIA, NSA, Bureau, all of it, anything. You know, DIA.
DIA, yeah, and anything like that would go to him. I think, because he is not what you would call, I don't know.
Trustworthy?
Trustworthy? No, he's not. Yeah, let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with trustworthy. Let's start with confusion. Confused, because the man doesn't know what the hell I think he's talking about half the time. You know, I just, jeez, you know?
Keep talking, Annie, because if I start trying to talk, the dogs are going to draw me out. Debbie's home for lunch.
Oh, okay. So- God, this is the only time you've ever told me to keep talking during one of these things, okay? No, that's... Okay, sorry.
I hear the peanut gallery got a kick out of that one, too.
No, but, you know, remember, do you remember, I think it was in 2010, when Diane Sawyer was interviewing James Clapper, and she told him about a bomb plot in the UK that was foiled by the, you know,
and it was
the authorities. And he said, oh, really? What? No, I didn't know. What do you mean you didn't know? I mean, so...
It was news to him.
It was news. I'm like, holy Moses. It's like, you're supposed to know all this stuff every single day, every single minute of the day. If it occurs while you're sleeping, your staff is supposed to wake you and supposed to tell you. You're supposed to get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep, you're one of those people who signed on to the 3 a.m. phone call. That's right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, hell, I used to get a 3 a.m. phone call.
Now, I might be willing to accept... no comment answer. You know, I might be willing to accept a disavow answer, but I'm not sure I accept. No, I hadn't heard.
I know. So, I mean, I think this man is totally incompetent, and I think that considering what do I want to say?
The incompetence of the
incompetence of the administration, but the fact that the administration wants to make the world believe that Al-Qaeda is dead and there is really no terrorist attacks any longer, that I really think that if he did change the wording, that goes right in line with the White House's plan and the White House's, you know, attitude. And
the White House's attitude, or the attitude of the administration and the mainstream media, that Hamas is not a terrorist organization. They are, after all, the duly elected governing body. You know, and you know, you can't call that a terror. You can't call the governing body of a sovereign nation a terrorist organization. You know. Baloney.
No, you can. I mean, just like...
And they just refuse to.
Yeah, they refuse to because that's, you know, not part of their...
Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, all these organizations. I'm sorry, folks. Not only are they terrorist organizations, but did you see the news reports, by the way, that they're starting to find training camps?
Where?
Here.
Here. No, I did not see those. No.
Yeah, here. They're starting to find camps. Wait a minute. I mean, starting to find camps. This isn't news. These camps have been going on since before the September attacks. This is not news, boys and girls. You know, we've got them training as close to us as far as I can tell. There may be something closer, but in Hancock, New York.
Really?
They have a compound. There's an Islamic community, and they have, you know, 80 or 90 or whatever it is, acres of land. And they've got pictures of these people roaming around out there with AKs and FNs. And here's the one that gets me, the one picture that came across, and I did some due diligence on it, and it's a legitimate picture because it was released to, not to the public, but to other Islamic organizations. A guy walking around, of course, they've got their ski masks on.
Yeah.
Wearing belts of ammunition.
Oh, great.
Wait. To a military man, such as myself, mm-hmm. when I see belted ammunition, I wonder, what are they going to feed that ammunition to?
Yeah.
If they've got belted ammunition, the odds are pretty good. They've got belt-fed weapons.
Yeah.
And anything that is belt-fed is generally not a hunting rifle.
No.
Now, granted, I've used it for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the odds are pretty good that they're not using it for deer.
And yet, if you have some sort of local militia, you know, started by American citizens.
Oh, yeah, then you're a domestic terrorist.
You're a domestic terrorist. Yes, you are.
You're on watch lists. You can't fly.
And if these people form a militia based on Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, they're domestic terrorists.
Then you're a radical.
Yeah, you're a radical. But these people who hate us are allowed to have these training camps and, yeah. Okay.
And I'd be willing to bet that every single one of the guys in that picture, if he puts his weapons down and goes and puts on his street clothes and went down, if it's in Hancock, New York, if they went down to Syracuse Airport, Albany Airport, any of the airports down there, hell, even Kennedy and LaGuardia, if they went to the airport and said, okay, I need to go to Syria, or I need to go to L.A., or I need to go to Portland, Oregon, or I need to go wherever they need to go, they just walk up, and they walk up to the counter and say, I need my ticket, and they get their ticket and their boarding pass, and they get on the airplane. They go right past TSA.
You know what gets me, though, up in Hancock? Isn't there a there's a military installation up there, isn't there?
Not far
away. Yeah.
Not far away. And, you know, but those guys could fly anywhere. You let somebody who's got ties to any American organization, let's go right to the top. Let's start with the John Birch Society.
Yeah, exactly.
And you turn around and you find out that you're a member of the John Birch Society and you got to fly from, I don't know, Kennedy, LaGuardia, or even Albany.
Yeah.
You know, you want to fly to, you know, a junket to Atlantic City. You know, and TSA is going to pull you on the side, get you naked.
Yeah.
You know, do a BC search. I mean, you know, treat you so badly that you'll miss your flight.
Yes.
You know,
and you'll have nightmares for years to come.
And you'll need therapy for crying out loud by the time they're done with you. And, you know, but you let one of these other guys go down and try and get on an aircraft, and they're already gone. They're already gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we can't offend them.
Yeah, we can't offend them, and oh my God, that's profiling. We can't do that. Oh my gosh,
yeah, so they get the right to move around freely, and Americans do not. And I really hope that anybody that, you know, I used to know, who if they asked me if I know them, I'd deny, that may or may not be on their way to Haifa, Tel Aviv, you know, places like that, Jerusalem. I wish them Godspeed and good luck. That's if they can get out of the airport.
Exactly.
And this all ties into the fact that, look, the Iron Dome works.
Yes, thank goodness.
That.
Unfortunately.
They've proven that it works.
Yeah.
Now, they say they have refitted the Patriot batteries, because you remember they shot like 60 of those back in the day, and they didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. But supposedly they've refit those, and they're supposed to work as well. However, the Patriots are not guarding Tel Aviv. They're guarding Jerusalem, and they're guarding Haifa and Beersheba. But it does work. So as I said, remember the Six-Day War and decide arithmetically how much shorter you want it to be before you start messing with the big I, because they're not going to tolerate this. The part that kills me is the fact that, yes, Britain has decried this. Where the heck is Maggie Thatcher when you need her?
God.
You know,
yeah, those days are long gone. Now they have, what the heck is his name? Oh, God.
God, who cares? He's still, you know, they haven't had anybody.
He's such a socialist. He's such a, you know, he's one of those people that just wants to be a celebrity.
He's Labor Party. I mean, what does that tell you?
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
You know, so when you add it up and divide by, you know, Ahmadinejad you know, has been caught this past week, the chairman of that department at the UN, mm-hmm. which, you know how we both feel about the UN, but came out and said, yes, they're still trying to build a nuclear weapon, and yes, they have delivery systems in place.
Yeah, and what is their main objective? Oh, let's see, wipe Israel off the face of the map, remember?
No, it's to provide electricity to the room.
Oh, yeah, I know. They're just so innocent. Oh, by the way, it's David Cameron.
Cameron.
Yeah, I knew it was Cameron.
The thing is, they've been proven to be working on it. You know, OPEC came out with a thing saying that the Arabian world should be using oil as a weapon against the United States.
Iraq, where we lost how many thousands of guys? What?
Right.
2,000? All right, trying to get them on the road to, you know, a decent country, and it's like, oh, geez, you know, talk about stabbing in the back. Okay, you know what? I personally am going to put them on my list of countries that I want to turn into a sheet of glass. Thank you very much.
Exactly, because here's my take on it. For everything we've done, you know, up by and for them, and all the blessed American lives that were lost in trying to do things of by and for them.
Plus all the billions of dollars we have given them.
Billions of dollars we dumped into them. And this is the way they're going to say, look, I am so sick to death of, to this day, seeing things on all kinds of websites that say, oh, the war for oil, the war for oil, the war for oil, when we're paying $4.09 a gallon.
Yeah, no, this is ridiculous. No, I agree with you. It's ridiculous.
You know, if we're going to fight a war for oil, damn it, I want the oil.
I want the oil, too. And I want my gas to be $1 a gallon.
I want my gas to be 39 cents.
Do you remember that? Oh, my gosh, yeah. When I was a kid.
Well, I remember that. Hell, I remember 23.9.
Oh, no. Okay.
I remember.
I'm a little younger than you.
Okay, not much, but.
I remember 26.9 Sunoco 260. You know, high test.
Oh my
stuff.
Gosh.
You know, so because we used to use it in our our high performance cars in those days.
Oh, yes.
So, well, I guess statute of limitations is over on how many times I broke the speed limit in my 55
yeah,
Chevy.
Yeah, I think so.
But the idea is, you know, I remember gas being that cheap, and you know what? They talk about fracking, you know, for some natural gas, and now they're talking about methane hydrate being mm-hmm. trapped in the ice. You can actually take ice from a certain level in the in Gulf of Mexico. In the Gulf of Mexico, you can take ice from a certain level, bring it up, and light it with a match. It's got so much gas dissolved in it.
And we're not doing a darn thing.
And we're not using it. And we've got, you remember driving down either the turnpike, the parkway, wherever. Mm-hmm. No, actually the turnpike. You can't see it from the parkway. Going past that whole area down there, Elizabeth Carteret.
Gosh, yes, people. Yes. All the refineries, yes.
All the refineries. And you remember those stacks up in the air with the burn-off going?
Yep.
That's all natural gas. That's all natural gas. And they were burning it. Just to get it out of the way. Those stacks were there burning it to get it out of the way of the process.
Mm-mm-mm.
Dissolved natural gas. These are billions and billions and billions and billions of BTUs going up in smoke.
I know. And the thing is that we're depending on people who are still living in the 14th century for our fuel sources, and I can't tell you how that ticks me off more and more every day. And they want to turn this country into a 14th century type of society. I mean,
I remember pictures coming out of Gulf War One, I'd love to be able to Google it and find them again, but I remember pictures from Gulf War One of these mud huts with expensive cars parked out in front of them. They just sat there. They didn't use any. They didn't drive them. They just sat there. And the mud huts with, you know, the latest, greatest refrigerators and stuff that they didn't use because there was no electricity. But they bought them because they all had so much money. Oh, we want this because it's what the West has. We want that because it's what the West has. They didn't use any of it.
Hmm.
But they all had it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... You know, so he wants to provide electricity to the rural parts of Iran. For what? They're not going to use it.
No.
You know, they're not going to use it. What the heck do they need it for?
No. And the thing is with Iran is that, do you remember at the end of George Bush's second term when the national intelligence estimates came out and they said, oh, well, we have determined that, no, Iran has stopped work on its nuclear weapons program.
They probably did for about 15 minutes.
No, they didn't. Actually, the thing is there. Now, wait a minute.
On LIED or something,
No, there was a reason for this. The Pentagon, the intelligence communities have been overrun with people that are very, very favorable to Islam. And they are very, very politically correct. Mm. And there are Muslims in the government that try and strike down anything that would make Muslim countries look bad. So when they actually came out and said and put in the National Intelligence Directorate that they weren't, going for a nuclear weapon, that was entirely false because that's not what the evidence showed. That's not what the intelligence showed. The intelligence showed that they were continuing and that they were ramping up efforts, but they were under considerable... This is where George Bush, remember when, this is right before they were thinking that George Bush and Netanyahu, they were getting together and they were going to do a strike on some of the facilities in Iran. But then all of a sudden the NIE report came out. He was basically double-crossed.
Double-crossed?
Yeah, no, he was double-crossed, George Bush.
He was double-crossed.
Yeah, by that report, because there are people in the GOD that are...
This goes to the incompetence of the Bush administration.
No, it doesn't go to the incompetence so much as it goes to the fact that we have allowed these people to take over our society, our culture, our national security.
Bush number one.
Yes.
41.
Yes.
All right. Ran as a coattail on Ron Reagan. And... You got to remember, up and until the convention, Ronald Reagan said, "I'm not taking him as a VP."
That's right. Yeah, he didn't want him at all. But he was
foisted upon.
Yes.
Reagan.
Yes.
And some people say by the Bilderbergers, but the thing is, Bush 41 came in and he had nothing to do with the ways of Reagan. That's and right. Then 43 came in. And unfortunately, we had the debacle that September 11th was. Mm-hmm. And he was all over it. He was there with photo ops with Rudy, and he made his We Will Not Falter speech. And, such a Churchill move.
Hey, I thought it was a good...
Churchill could... I voted for him because he was a Republican candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't happy with him.
I wasn't happy with him in some respects.
I voted for Romney this time out, and I wasn't happy with him one iota. I was happier with his VP. Hell, I voted for McCain because I didn't vote for McCain. I voted for Palin.
Yeah.
And 43 had even less. Oh, he was a great one for the photo op, and he was a great one with a word here and there. As I said, a very Churchill speech, we will not tire, we will not fail. But had that been Reagan... We'd be paying 39 cents a gallon for gas.
See, the thing is, what happens is with that, a lot of people look at the GOP, people who have studied everything and said, this is the GOP's fault. It is, because it started with Reagan, where they did foist George Bush on him and said, yep, you have to take him. So Ronald Reagan did not have a viable conservative successor.
Right.
He didn't. And then when George Bush, so basically, as you said, came in on his coattails, on Reagan's coattails. And then he could not fight against Bill Clinton because he was not a strong person. He was not a strong conservative.
Not only was he not a strong conservative, he didn't have the star caliber
that
Clinton brought to it.
That's right.
Same thing with Obama. He was voted on star quality, not usefulness as a president of the United States, but star quality.
Exactly.
McCain did not have that star quality. Romney did not have... Romney had billionaire quality, but not star quality. And I still say it right now. If Reagan was in office on September 11, we'd be paying $39.9 for gasoline. And all the liberals would be decrying the war for oil, the war for oil, the war for oil, and driving their Beamers and their...
Shut up. That's another thing. I'm sick and tired of these people.
You know, and flying in their private jets at $39.9 a gallon for gasoline.
Yeah.
And complaining about it, but driving at $39.9.
Yeah, and don't forget, all these liberals do include all those people from Hollywood. Most of them, at least. Most of them.
Well, more and more of them are getting away from that, but or at least admitting that they're away from that. And that's a good thing, but it's not enough. It's certainly not enough. It wasn't enough this time, and it's not enough in the past. I think what has to happen now is, first and foremost, as I said last time we podcast, I've left the GOP. I am now listed as an independent.
Yep.
You know, and that's just how it is. So I lose the ability to look. The primary thing has been a joke since Reagan. If it wasn't for the fact that he had what America needed, and it needed badly at that time coming out of Carter, he would not have gotten the nod in the first place.
Yeah, and you know what? And this is what I feel with Romney. I know we've gotten off track here, folks, but I think we're still stinging over the election.
Stinging hell. If Romney was in office or the president-elect right now,
yeah,
those missiles would not be aimed at Tel Aviv right now.
No, I agree with you on that point. I agree with you on that point.
They would have never tested the Iron Dome because it wouldn't be, a couple of missiles coming across to Gaza.
Yeah.
You know, but that's been happening almost, then they come to a ceasefire. Then they start firing again. Then they come to a ceasefire. Then they start firing again. And then this is about the 36th time in as many months that this has gone on.
Yeah, that's why I say that the support from the White House is for public consumption.
Period. Yeah. And it had, however, had Romney been elected and be sitting there as the president-elect and Ryan as the vice president-elect, this would not be happening. It would be happening, but it wouldn't be to the point where Netanyahu is calling up reserves,
mm-hmm.
to the point where, the Iron Dome, it would be sitting there saying, gee, we got to test this someday.
Yeah, exactly.
Not already proven to have worked. It would be sitting, we got to try this out someday. But this would not be, Benghazi would have been retaliated for by now.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that, Romney was president, yeah.
Well, even as president-elect, that stuff would either not be happening, or it would have been, if he was...
Well, he can't do anything as president-elect.
No, but the thing is, if he was president-elect, a lot of the stuff that's coming across that's just flat, plain old Obama BS would be a little bit mitigated, I think.
Yeah, maybe. But
because he'd know that there's a couple of people coming in the door behind him that are going to call him on this.
That's true, because yes, you do know that. Remember when Ronald Reagan was sworn in, the hostages left Iran.
Yep, so, within moments.
Within moments, yes, because he had sworn. Guess what? We're coming for you.
Yep, and as opposed to the Operation Desert, whatever it was, to go get them that failed miserably.
Well, you know what? And there were a few reasons for that. One, he had cut the defense budget. So,
yep, exactly.
Yeah, they weren't training the way they should. Okay, they weren't. They weren't training the way they should. I mean, this stuff, the equipment was not maintained the way it should have been maintained.
I would love anybody that's a military veteran knows what I'm going to say here. I would love to have seen the 2404 on that helicopter before it left the airbase.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and a 2404, for those who don't know, is a maintenance form that lives in a little pocket in every single piece of equipment that certifies by some, private, then some sergeant, then some lieutenant, on the way up the chain of command, that the maintenance has been performed to specification on that piece of equipment from every point. Each engine has one. The helicopter as a whole has one. Each rotor has one. And the 2404 forms are stored in a little pocket in the glove compartment. And I'd be willing to bet that it was not updated as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, and look what it cost us.
Yeah. So look at what we've been doing here. We've been going back a little bit in just an hour lifetime, Six-Day War.
Yep.
Right? Move it forward And, you know, things that have happened since then, you know, I mean, let's see.
Well, I remember.
The Marine attack in Lebanon. Remember when they killed our Marines? Okay. Remember that? Yep. Also, when
the
Kuwait.
Coal.
I'm sorry? The coal, yes. The coal. But Kuwait was, you know, was invaded. And, I mean, how. I mean, you just keep going forward on everything that has happened. The fact that Iran is still around and still a pain in the neck, and to put it mildly. I mean, Egypt has undergone a whole bunch of changes. Nothing changes there. Nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, even Egypt.
Yes.
They got as much support as they could out of us for getting rid of Mubarak.
Which was a mistake. I'm sorry. The man was not
the
best. Well,
it's the same mistake as getting rid of the Shah of Iran.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're all extremists. The people that take over are extremists, and they're Islamist extremists. And Sharia law and everything is going to... since their main thing is to wipe out Israel... I don't see anything good coming out of this.
Well, I don't see anything good coming of it, but my blessing to the IDF.
Yes.
I remember these things. I remember, man, Mordechai Had, Ariel Sharon, Weizmann, Rabin. I remember back in the day, pardon me, and... you know, 67, 74, I remember these things.
Yep.
And I remember the fact that they had all made that same, not so much,
Sharon?
No, Ben-Gurion.
Okay, Ben-Gurion, okay.
But the rest of it, well, Ben-Gurion goes all the way back to, sinking that ship. Yeah. The idea is that, I remember all this, and I remember one thing that made me follow it, aside from the fact that I had some intensely Zionist friends,
mm-hmm.
To the point where they were kibbutzniks, which you'd think I wouldn't handle that well because kibbutzniks tend to be socialists.
Yeah, true. But now they're capitalists.
Well, yes, they are. But... The thing is, I remember so much of this stuff from back then, and the one thread that carries it through to today is that even if they were to lose, and when I say lose, the only thing that will cause them to be considered lost is annihilation.
Exactly.
But even up to and including annihilation, they're going down with a hell of a fight.
Exactly. Yes, I agree.
And we just might be able to go in there, clean it all up, and put gas pumps on the top of that sheet of glass.
You know, I don't want to see Israel get hurt. You know what I mean? I'm using that. I'm using expression to get hurt, but...
We have been so Chamberlain-esque, for lack of a better analogy.
Oh, gosh. Weak need.
Now, politically correctness to the point of Chamberlainism.
Yes.
With the Middle East for 235 years.
Too long.
Ever since the shores of Tripoli.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once that little operation was over, we've done nothing but try and appease. And, let's see if we can bring up their standard of living. No. Because we've gone in there to take up their standard of living. And you know what? If you go to some of the cities, you'll see a little bit better standard of living. You go 15 seconds outside the city and you got mud huts again.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't want a better standard of living.
They don't want a better. They want to live in the 13th, 14th yes. century. They're happy like that.
Yes, they are. Because that is their culture. And that's what they want.
We're trying to help them bring up their standard of living. We're trying to bring them, into an age when, human rights violations aren't quite so widespread. We're trying to... And all of this for 200 years has not worked.
See,
for all the appeasement with the taking out the Shah, and for all the appeasement taking out Mubarak, and all the the Arab Spring, and all this other stuff, it didn't help. Look at Afghanistan. Look at Iraq. Look at Kuwait. Look at these places. Look at them.
Yeah.
They every time the part that's a hoot is the people do not understand that if you go down the street. And you take out one Islamic terrorist, there are five more waiting to take his place.
Exactly.
And, you know, when I was a rookie cop, and I was in a squad car for my second day on the job out of the academy, I rode with a sergeant, and that sergeant said, "See that guy in that corner?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "He's a drug dealer." I said, "Okay." He said, "If you were to shoot him dead, there are two more willing to take his place. What does that tell you?" I said, "I need two boxes of ammo."
And what did he say to that?
He said, "I like you." So, you know, but the thing is, what are we talking about? You know, and it's because they say, "Oh, if we win this this one, you know, village, this hamlet, this this, you know, little area, and we can bring them, you know, food, water, and aid, and we can, you know, get it all
control." Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, the American Friends Committee and the whatever evangelical organization, they go in there with their Bibles and free food, and the next thing you know, they're all dead.
They're dead.
You know, we got to go in there and take care, clean up the mess again. All this other, look, as far as I'm concerned, I go by the first two rules. Rule number one, there are no such thing as friendlies or innocents in a combat zone.
That's right.
Rule number two is, if you encounter innocents or friendlies in a combat zone, review rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
If I were in charge over there, I'd drop, you know, the way we did in the old days, I'd drop leaflets.
Mm-hmm.
If you know of anyone in your neighborhood who has a rocket launcher under a tarp in their mud hut, get out of there now. In 4 hours, we're going to make them disappear. And if you're here, you're going with it.
Yeah, but that's, can't do that anymore. That is, oh my gosh, that's picking on civilians. Oh,
no. We're giving them warning. And if they stay, then they're not friendlies in the combat zone, are they?
But we're still at fault. We're still the aggressors. Mm-hmm. We're still the murderers of these innocent people, because that's how it will be played.
If I was sitting here and there's been, you know, hostilities in the area and all this other stuff, and I'm sitting here and somebody drops leaflets on my house that says, "In 4 hours, this place is going to disappear," I'm sorry. Unless I'm one of those people shooting the rockets, I'm leaving.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you have brains. A lot of these people don't. Look, what's happening, what happens here is that, you know, you have these people that live in the 13th, 14th century, and we go in there and we try to change the quote-unquote hearts and minds, and we do it with a lot of money, a lot of food and everything.
Yeah, we lost Vietnam that way, too.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what happens is that these people see these stupid people coming toward them with wide smiles on their faces and "we love yous" coming out of them and everything, and they say, "Wait a minute, you know, if I take this food from them and eat it, it enables me to have enough strength that I could kill these bastards."
Yep. Yep, yep.
And then the next people come in, and we'll just wait until the next ones come in. And then we can just live off of them and live the way they want and just do a lot of nodding and glad-handing and all this other stuff. And, you know, so yeah, they're basically using us.
Group therapy 101, enabling.
Exactly.
You know, the thing, you know, we're going to let you fly everywhere, and because we don't want to offend you, we're going to let you go right through the gates, and we're not going to inspect your baggage.
Yeah.
You know, it's Napolitano's no better than any of the other ones when it comes to ineptitude.
No, I just, you know, we have to stop.
How come underneath of Bush or anybody else, it was like, "Oh, this is going to be another Vietnam. This is going to be another Vietnam. This is going to be another Vietnam." And Obama runs saying, "Oh, I'm going to pull out our troops. I'm going to close Gitmo, a lot of, you know." He gets in office, and things don't start decreasing, but nobody's saying, "Oh, it's another Vietnam."
Oh, God, no. No, because the right people are in charge now. The correct people. The people that, you know, think the way the press does and think the way the extremists think. So that's fine.
I've often said that I am not a vengeful man. Generally speaking, I do not carry a grudge.
Mm-hmm.
And when people say, oh, gee, that's nice, I always put my codicil to it and say, once I get even, I forget all about it.
I like that.
I'm sorry. I want blood for blood.
Yeah, I do too.
I want our people avenged. I don't, and I'm not just talking necessarily about the ambassadors and company people at Benghazi. I mean every man and woman who got so much as a Purple Heart in the last years since, or ever for that matter, but in the last year since September 11th, 2001. Yeah. I want blood for blood. And you're not going to get it by giving them food and water and infrastructure and aid and all this other stuff. I say cut every nickel of aid with it. Let's put a thumbtack in Tel Aviv and stretch it out, you know, 500 nautical miles.
Mm-hmm.
And draw a circle. And pull that thumbtack out. And with the exception of Israel, everything that falls inside that circle, not another nickel.
I agree.
Not another nickel, not another soldier, not another, you know, apparatchik, aid worker, nothing. Nothing. Pull it all out of there. Bring it all home, put it on our borders, put it in our cities, and leave enough behind in Israel to help them out where they need the help.
I agree. Yes,
and when they all sit there in on the east side of Manhattan, you know, railing against us, say, "Oh, well, sorry, you don't like it."
Hey, get folks, have another croissant, you know, with your coffee, or you know, have another, hey. You know.
When they're all sitting up there in the UN and they start railing against us, say, "Get out,
mm-hmm.
get out."
Yeah, I say we use the domain on that.
We'll pull the QE2. We'll rent a charter, the QE2, a beautiful luxury cruise liner. We'll pull it right up to the side of this building, hop on, and we'll cruise the globe for as long as it takes for each and every one of you to pick, oh, this is where I want to go. Get off.
No. The QE2 is too good for them. Okay.
I know it is, you get an oil barge.
You get an oil barge, and you force them on it. You say, here, have fun, enjoy the ride.
Get an oil barge.
Yeah.
I saw a thing the other day that we're talking about having what they call aid in a box.
And what is that?
Aid in a box is pre-packed shipping containers. You know, the kind you see on semis and the kind you see stacked up on shipping?
Yeah.
They put all kinds of stuff self-contained in these containers. And if they need to do aid someplace, shipping freighters can drop these off instead of having to wait until an aircraft carrier or another Navy ship can get there and, you know, all this other stuff. They take some strategic troops, put them in an aircraft, the shipping containers are already on the ground, bang, aid in the box. So if you have a tsunami, if you have an earthquake, you have whatever, you know, we can bring aid very rapidly to any point. For what?
Why? Who cares?
For what? Because, no man, you know, people say, oh, you know, if we don't go, what are they going to say about us in the UN? Well, what the hell do they say about us in the UN when we do go?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, you want to be a humanitarian. You want to be a nice guy. You want to, you know, you know, I'm not saying share the wealth, but I'm saying, you know, you don't want to see your fellow man suffer. But you know what? A lot of these people are suffering at their own hand.
That's right.
A lot of these people, you know, look at all of the warehouses with emergency supplies and trucks and all that other stuff, all painted blue. sitting there alongside of an airfield, sitting there alongside of a seaport, ridden with rats and wild dogs and wild cats and overgrown with plants and stuff, because this is aid. Billions and billions of dollars we sent to go and help people is sitting there going to... I mean, geez, at least take the cars and trucks and drive them around. Nope. Sitting there on flat, dry-rotted tires.
Hmm.
Windows busted out by local kids, you know, throwing rocks. Because I don't care where you are in the world. I'm sorry. You leave something parked somewhere and local kids are going to throw rocks at it. It's just how it is. Yeah. I was a little kid once. I get it. But all of this stuff going away, why are we bothering?
I know.
You know, now, when we had the tidal wave and stuff like that, those countries were appreciative. They really were. When we go down to places like, you know, when Mexico City had that monster earthquake and we sent zillions of dollars in aid and material and people and stuff, they appreciated it, you know, to some extent anyway. But when you talk about the amount of stuff that we still send stuff to places that just flat don't need it. We've got sheikhs building man-made islands with man-made skyscrapers that are designed to be the tallest building in the world, and they're supposed to look like the symbols of the sheikh family and the caliph family. They're building this stuff in the middle of the sea because they want to. Well, why are we sending them anything?
Exactly.
Why are we sending them McFry's coupons, for crying out loud, let alone anything else?
I know. And yet, Obama can't be bothered to send help to our ambassador in Benghazi. All right?
And what would it have taken? You know what? It doesn't even take a stroke of a pen. When the little aide walks up and says, "Mr. President, we have a situation." He goes out of the room with the little aide, and they stand there in a soundproof, and he says, "Okay, here's the gig.
In the sit room.
We got this call from the consulate, you know, in Benghazi. They're going to be they are either under attack or going to be under attack, you know, imminently, you know." You know, we've got to do something. What should we do? Well, get a hold of you're going to see the video drop out. Get a hold of whomever it needs to be and get that thing rolling. Put troops on the ground, put boots on the ground, you know, put machine guns on the ground, put mortars on the ground, put whatever it is you got to put, and then put a helicopter in the air, get them out of there. You know, or all he would have actually had to say is, get a hold of the Secretary of Defense and handle it. And then the machine itself would have picked up and it would have gone over there. It would have gone into defense mode, kept them people safe until there was a lull. The helicopter would have come, pulled all those people out all at once. And that would have been that.
Yeah, but that would have offended those people then. You know what I mean? Seriously, that's what they're basing their inaction. They're basing, now, do you understand? Obama doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about anything. He cares about the Islamists. He does. He doesn't care about America. He cares about keeping these people happy. That's what he cares about.
But if you want to keep the people happy, that's fine. You want to keep the people happy.
Why would I want to keep them happy?
You want to keep the people happy by saying, okay, look, you want this building here. You can have it. Don't burn it down. Don't bomb it. Here, just you can have the building and everything in it, you know, after, of course, we hit the thermite bombs that are sitting on all the computers and stuff like that so that we don't lose anything. You know, we're going to pull our people out and you can have the rest. You know, oh, no, that is not what we want. We want to kill the people in it, too. Oh, all right, well, go ahead.
That's basically it. Look, there's no excuse for what happened. Okay, somebody told them to just sit, all right? Because there was no way that the president did not know. You have the sit room there. In the sit room, you have representatives from every single intelligence organization, all right? Always there, all right? Somebody is always working there.
That's your job.
Yes, that's somebody is always working there, okay? And the thing is that, so the amount of information that goes through there that the president is supposed to see, of course he doesn't because he doesn't go to his national security briefings. There is no way. So, and Petraeus' comment that he recognized it was a terror attack, and then somewhere in the middle of this, all of a sudden, so basically what happened was is that he said, listen, you're having an affair with this little chicky poo. What we're going to do is we're going to use this against you. Petraeus said, I'm resigning, but but then probably I'm going to tell the truth. And he did.
Oh, he can now because he's a civilian.
Yeah,
and you know what, though? Look, and I don't want to sound callous here. I really don't, because I know what these words mean. And we've heard them before. Two phrases. One is, mistakes have been made.
Yeah.
We've heard that before. Mistakes were made.
I'm sorry. I don't buy that.
I'm not saying it's forgivable. I'm saying that that's something people have used in the past. Mistakes were made.
Yes.
All right. Or, here's another one. The secretary will disavow.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, both of those are very cold-hearted phrases, but they're legitimate phrases to be used in an explanation. Now, the American public doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody within any command infrastructure knows what it means to say mistakes were made and or the secretary will disavow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the leader of the CIA steps down and is now a civilian. He's not bound by, well, he's probably still bound by some paragraph, but he probably sidestepped that paragraph a little bit. But to turn around and say, he could have just sat there and said, mistakes were made.
Yeah, he didn't, yeah.
You know, he all he did was testify to what he, you know, knew and when he knew it, but he didn't testify to the point where he could just go, mistakes were made.
Let me tell you something. You know, all this stuff that's going on, when Obama gets sworn...
Because a mistake is not... I'm not saying it's completely forgivable. But a mistake is a whole lot more forgivable than a cover-up.
This was a cover-up. This was deliberate.
This was a deliberate?
This was deliberate. Cover-up?
An obfuscation of the facts as they were. And this is, mistakes were made is terrible. But at least it's an admission that something went wrong.
Well, if something went wrong, fine. But I don't believe something went wrong.
No, I believe they were sacrificial lambs.
Yeah, they were. They were. They were. So, plus, with everything that's going on right now with this, with Benghazi, everything else that's going on with Israel being attacked, when this president gets sworn in again, I want to see him under such a cloud. I want to see that I don't think the mainstream media even can afford to ignore it.
No, they can't ignore it. The pallor that is over D.C. now, and that's I go so far as to say not including Benghazi.
Yeah, true. That's true.
But the obvious failure of the machine to operate at any modicum of efficiency is just too bright shining star in there to be ignored.
Let's kind of like wrap this up a bit. Where do you think where do you think this is all going to go?
Nowhere.
You think that there's just going to be some sort of uneasy truce between Hamas and Israel, and they'll stop?
Oh, them. Oh. I was talking about domestic.
No. Let's go with the Middle East.
Something else will come up for the media to turn its laser on, and they'll be following that, and these stories about all of this stuff will drift further and further and further down the page, people will still be complaining about it, but they won't get the coverage of it. It'll just disappear. As far as what's going to go on in the Middle East, well, they're already making overtures on a ceasefire in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, it is up to Hamas. If Hamas wants to play the game they've played so many times, in the past, recent past, they'll say, okay, we'll have a ceasefire. And they'll go for the ceasefire long enough for things to re-normalize. Because their normal and ours is a whole lot different thing. I mean, there are checkpoints and walls and fences and stuff all over the place over there, kind of like we should have on Mexico. And, life over there is not simple by any stretch. The NPR or NPB, actually, broadcasting television and radio, you know, did these things about these families that are divided because one member of the family could get a card to live in Jerusalem and the other one could not. So, you know, they live there and then they visit each other on weekends and that kind of thing. And, you know, oh, I live here, but my husband can't live here and he can't even come and visit his son. I have to go and visit him on Saturdays. And why can't he live there? What reason did the government of Israel not give him a card to live there? Could it be because he's a threat to their national security?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they expect us to bleed our hearts over this woman.
They expect us to bleed our hearts over this woman and child because they can live in Jerusalem and her husband can't. And, oh, she's got to, you know, go through the checkpoints every week and go to see him.
Yeah. Your husband's a person.
And they never mention the fact that the husband's probably somebody that's convicted of being a threat to Israel.
Yeah, exactly.
And the part is, you look at the stuff when it goes by, and you see names like Levin and Rothstein and Goldberg and this producing and directing these documentaries. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But, you know, if Hamas follows the pattern, they will agree to a ceasefire, and they will let things renormalize and let people visit each other on each side of the border and go through that for a few weeks, and then it'll start again.
I don't know. I don't think we're going to be that, I hate to use the word lucky, but I think that this is just going to start escalating. I think Iran and Hezbollah are going to start partnering with Hamas.
The only thing that scares me is that if I implicitly trust the Mossad,
mm-hmm.
More than I trust some United States agencies of a similar quality.
Yes.
I trust the Mossad to know, and I think this is the one thing that could change the game. If the Mossad knows for a fact that Ahmadinejad is not launchable, if they decide that within a shadow of a doubt, he does not have the ability to put in motion the mass destruction. If they know for a fact that they can clean this stuff up without having to worry about a strike involving a nuclear weapon, strategic or tactical.
Right.
If they know they can pull this off, then no, all bets are off. I'm sorry. There won't be a Syria.
Yeah.
There won't be a Jordan. And there'll be damn little of Iran.
Yeah.
Iraq's going to lose some stuff, and Egypt's going to lose a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, Lebanon may, because Lebanon's never really been a big problem, Lebanon may turn around and say, we are okay down here, just leave us alone.
Leave us alone.
I think there's going to be, I mean, face it, look at it this way. I'm sorry, I wouldn't want to put our Top Gun people against the Israeli Air Force.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't want to put, you know, I love to death our special forces people, our Rangers, our Green Berets, our SEALs, our Delta teams. You know what? They'd have a hard fight against the IDF.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, because these are trained, competent combat troops. These aren't terrorists running from, you know, mud hut to mud hut with a 45-year-old AK-47 and right. You know, and a couple of old mortars. This is a well-trained and intense fighting force, and I mean intense. Look in their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean even the cute girls. You look inside that eye, and you look straight back there the way only another military person can, and this is a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
This is a warrior.
I agree.
And I think that if they decide to go to negotiations, fine. But if the Mossad goes up to Netanyahu and says, okay, Prime Minister, we have checked, he cannot launch,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to see this go into the six-minute war.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
It took 6 days in 67. Let's take that down arithmetically from 1967 to 2011 and do the math. 6 days, 6 seconds, 6 minutes, whatever it works out to, but that's all it's going to take.
Yeah. My only concern is that the U.S., Obama and his administration will mess around with Israel as far as intelligence is concerned, because obviously, you know, we are covering things there, and I'm afraid that some of our intelligence about Israel or would not be given to them you know, be given to Israel.
No.
And...
As if it matters.
No, it does matter because
it
you
doesn't.
Mossad is not. No, look, as good as they are, they you know they have missed things in the past. Okay, they have. So you know, and sometimes we get the stuff. So you know, that's my concern that
no,
they
we
will
wouldn't be forthcoming enough with
yeah,
the information
that they'll deliberately screw them over.
Well, all right, but I'm hoping that you know again, you know.
But I have,
as
I have
an
no
intelligence gathering agency. Even the KGB bows to the Mossad.
That's true. No, that's well, the KGB is so screwed up right now.
Yeah, well, right now I'm just
right now. Within the next year, forget it. They're going to be just as
sure.
Good as
well, don't forget about all that flexibility that.
Yep. Well, don't forget. You know, Obama is going to be heading over to Russia to
yes,
get his. Yes, he's going to be getting his orders from the high command.
Yes, he's going to be walking in there, and he's going to kneel and kiss the ring of Putin.
You got it.
And, you know, that's scary enough right there. But, you know, again, as I said, if the Mossad can walk into Netanyahu's office and say, you know, we're good, you know, we're good.
Right.
He can't touch us. You know, Egypt is another ball game.
Yeah, Egypt, that's a powder keg. I'm sorry.
Yes, it's a powder
nothing,
keg.
Nothing has been settled in Egypt.
I think the good thing about Egypt is because of everything left over from the tearing down of Mubarak, I don't think they're in good enough shape in a row in any department to be able to pull anything off. They may have some frontline troops under some frontline commanders that could pull off this, that, and the other thing, but I don't think they have the ability to put together a coordinated, because we've got to remember, at this point, they're going to be on the defense.
That's true. And of course, there goes the Mideast Accord, remember?
The Mideast Accord's been gone since.
No, they have not really. Egypt has not attacked Israel. Okay? Not for a while.
No, but they haven't. But just by virtue of not wanting to be bothered, they've got too much going on inside their own country. They've been sitting back letting Hamas and Hezbollah and all these other places do all their dirty work. You think they're not funding that?
Oh, of course they're funding it. You know,
so but it's
one
so
thing,
why are
it's
they
one
not
thing.
Considered a
no,
combatant?
No. I didn't say they weren't combatant. I just, you know, I know that, look, the players in this are the Arabs against Israel.
Yep.
No matter what country they're in.
That's right.
That's all that matters. And they may do something for their own gain, you know, as opposed to, you know, the guy in Iran will do something, and you know, but... to screw over Jordan, but basically the goal
this
is the same.
This is basically coming down, and this is why there are certain people. Have you noticed, by the way, the stories that are covering how many people are flying to Israel right now? And I'm saying Christians.
I do know that I've been listening to a bunch of talk shows, and there have been people calling in who are Jewish. And as you know, that they can have dual citizenship. They are citizens of Israel, anybody who's Jewish. And they are on their way. And they were in the Israeli military, and they are going to be fighting for Israel.
Yeah. But all the Christians in question, and this is where we were going before with the terrorists from their side being able to wander around
right.
with impunity. Well, our people, if you actually believe in the Constitution, are radicals. There are Christians flying over there to be near Megiddo.
Oh, for God's sake.
And if you want to talk about somebody who's a little bit out there on the fringe.
A little?
Yeah. And they're going to Megiddo. And that's what they're doing. And you know what? But then again, there's people who pick up rattlesnakes, too. You know,
sure.
I mean,
yeah.
And drink cyanide and stuff, you know. But anyway, the idea is that... basically what we are, and to cement down their argument just a little tiny bit, we are looking at a battle between Allah and Yahweh.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we are. Okay. Yeah. But that battle's been going on for how many thousands of years now? Come on.
Yes. Ever since there was, ever
yes.
since there was an Allah.
Yes.
And, you know, so... the thing is, it truly is a battle, and right now, it looks like this one of the most heated exchanges since the 70s.
Yes.
Of Allah versus Yahweh. And the nice thing is that in 1949, they proved their mettle.
Yes.
And in the 60s, they refined their metal, and in the 70s, they hammered it into a sword. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here it is, so many decades later. I'm not sure they've, you know, with the fact that they're living in the 14th century, I'm not sure that they actually realize how far the Israelis have come. Yeah. You know, when you look back at the fact that about 260,000 Israelis in 1967 defeated about 1 million Arabs in 1967, you gotta, you know, and just in deployed numbers, people who are actually standing there with a helmet on and a rifle in their hand, you know, or in the seat of a jet, you know, talking about 100,000 Israelis against probably 300,000 Arabs. Mm-hmm. And they whipped their ass in 6 days.
Right.
And if you've got all these Israeli citizens, Americans, but Israeli citizens, you know, going over to Israel now saying, I am a part of the IDF, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sorry there, you know, Arab League, you're in deep, deep doo-doo.
Yeah, but there's one thing that we haven't talked about, which I really think needs to be said, Russia. Now, Russia has been supplying Syria with weapons. They've been mm-hmm. supplying Iran with,
missiles.
Yeah, but centrifuges too, okay?
Oh, yeah, centrifuges.
And they have been supplying also Iraq now is going to be a customer, if they have not already started being a customer.
Well, I thought Iraq was a customer of China.
No, I saw a few reports that said that they are in negotiations. So
if they're a customer of China, they're still a customer of Russia. Just one more door.
Yeah, exactly. Egypt. So to think that this stuff is all getting all funneled down. So you know darn well that Gaza, the people, Hamas in Gaza is going to get some of this stuff. It's going to be taken over the borders, given to them. So Russia, that little country, that big country over there, who we thought, you know, we didn't have anything to fear from anymore. They're going to be a big factor in this whole Mideast conflict.
That they don't have to fear anymore. Insert eye roll here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but what I'm just saying, you know, and I know that, you know, they're becoming a larger threat.
So the latest dispatch is that ceasefire talks are taking place in Egypt.
Yeah.
As Israel considers a ground offensive. And
they want to be ready.
Evidently, Netanyahu has now come to public and warned them, we're ramping up.
Okay.
You know, and I'll tell you what, I don't care, you know, we used to see T-shirts and stuff that said, you know, love Allah, here, we'll send you for a visit, you know, things like that. You know, other than those people running in the streets, shooting in the air with their AKs, and, you know, go ahead, shoot in the air with your AK, that's less bullets you got. You know, going, la, 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 you know, all that stuff. Other than those people, I don't think the rest of the people, you know, I used to say it, the people, peasants don't care. Peasants don't care who's sitting in the castle. Peasants don't care, you know, the peasants in China, the coolies in China, didn't give a doggone, you know, if it was a dynasty, you know, or if it was Mao. They didn't care. Their life did not change.
Yeah.
They got up in the morning, they went out, and they planted and harvested their tea, or they planted and harvested their rice, or they fished, whatever it was they did. It did not matter to them who was in charge up top. Nothing changed for them. You know, and it's the same thing. I mean, look, we went through the same thing in our revolution. The revolution against George III was basically almost an elitist thing. You know, almost an urban thing. The people out in the countryside didn't care. They didn't care.
Yeah.
Not so much that they were Tories or Whigs or, you know, Sons of Liberty. Most of them didn't care. They got up in the morning and they hunted their deer and they planted their corn and then they, you know, went to bed at night. That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that's difficult in this scenario is a lot of people in Egypt, Jordan, Syria, they don't care. They don't care.
Yes, maybe they don't care, but no, they are raised with hatred of Israel and that Israel has to be destroyed.
Okay, but
it
I'm
is,
saying
no. It, well, it is part of the Quran.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. And I'm just saying, I really still don't. I believe that there is not so much a majority, even if it's only a minority, but there are a bunch of people who really don't care. Life is hard. Life is hard. I don't care where you go. You know, life is hard. They're busy out there, you know, scratching out a living out of their mud brick homes. They
yeah,
really
they're
don't.
Doing it, they're doing it as followers of Allah. That's mm-hmm. the thing. Their reasoning, I think,
what
is
about,
something
what about
that the Western mind cannot understand. You really have
about,
to.
Yeah, but what about spillover? What about places like Pakistan and Bangladesh? Or they don't call it that anymore.
No,
I'm sorry.
Don't.
But East Pakistan. what about those? You know, look at India. India is almost the world power nowadays.
I know. That's, yeah.
You know, what about what about Indonesia? You know, what about the Horn of Africa? Look at all this Islamist stuff all over the map.
Yeah.
You know, how that's spillover?
That's their whole idea, to take over the world.
Right. But what about spillover? You know, you want to, like I said, you want to put a thumbtack in Tel Aviv and pull a 500 nautical mile, you know, radius.
Yeah.
What about the rest of it?
Well, let me put you this way. Maybe it'll make a dent in their numbers enough, and they'll go, maybe this wasn't a good idea after all, and they'll just behave themselves. Or we can always send them back there, and, you know, I don't know.
Well, Pakistan is, Afghanistan, you know, Kazakhstan, places like that are bad enough. I mean, look at Afghanistan.
Yeah.
You know, we were there for how long?
Yeah, and Russia, Soviet Union was there for how long, too? And they both got their butts kicked.
Yeah, and on top of that, we one of the things that they hoped to accomplish with the occupied Afghanistan was to at least put a dent in, if nothing else, the heroin traffic.
That didn't happen now, did it?
No, mm-hmm. that didn't happen. Their heroin production has actually increased.
Yep, it has.
And you face it, they supply 90 or more percent of the heroin in the world,
mm-hmm.
and their heroin production has increased. Their poppy production, I don't know, heroin.
Whatever
their
you make, whatever.
Yeah, their poppy production has actually increased.
Yeah.
So you know, they. How about spillover? You know, so the price of oil will go up, but the price of heroin will go down. Isn't that a legitimate tactic?
Oh God.
Wouldn't that be a legitimate tactic? Let's put it this way. If a ton of poppy goes for $1 million.
Okay.
What if they start selling it for, I don't know, 500 grand?
And? So
and,
it'll make it cheaper.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So instead of, a junkie on the street of New York or on the street of Chicago or on the streets of West Twohole or Alabama.
Yeah.
Can now get his fix for a dollar instead of 10. Well, he's going to start, you know, it's going to get, they're hoping that it'll ramp it up and turn it into a wildfire thing. Get the entire planet stoned on their skulls.
And then take them over.
And then take them over. Which has always been the entire thing. You know, poppy is a good, but you've got to remember, they can't use it. It's against the Quran.
Yep.
That's so they can't.
True. That's true.
So what are they going to do with it? They got to sell it. They got to do something. They can produce it. They can touch it. It's not like a pig.
Oh
they can, you know, they can gather it and touch it and ship it. They just can't use it.
I never even thought of that. Oh my gosh!
So they get the entire world stoned out of their skull cheap, and then do the same thing they did with oil. We're addicted to oil. They jack the price.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the old days when a pusher.
Yeah.
You know, hey, try this 3-4 times, get you hooked, now you got to pay for it.
Yep, there you go. That's how they get you.
So that's what they're going to do with the pots. You know, look at all the hashish that comes out of Turkey and out of Morocco, out of Libya. All that hashish that comes out of, you know, the grass and hashish that comes out of there. All of a sudden, let's say the price drops out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with places like Colorado allowing people to have an ounce of it in their possession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, the world's stoned.
That's true.
And, you know, it's not even like a drunk. Yeah. You know, those stoners, they get to, yeah, man, whatever. We're going to sit here and talk about curing the ills of the universe, man. You know.
Yeah.
In the meantime, the yells of the universe come up and shoot them right in the butt.
Exactly. What'd you do that for, man? I wasn't, you know, walking on you.
Wait a minute now. This goes off topic just a little bit, but it does actually stay on topic. How the heck do you think the stoners of the world are going to handle life nowadays? How do you think they're going to handle life when they don't have Twinkies for when they get the munchies?
Oh, my God, Twinkies. Thank you, Baker's Union.
They did, well, you know what? They did the math, and 100% loss is much better than 8% loss. It's a bigger number, right?
I can't believe these people. Do you know what was amazing is that the Teamsters also worked at these bakeries, and the Teamsters said, well, if we need to make cuts, that's fine. You know, we understand. Things are tough right now. We'll make cuts. Baker's Union said, no, nope, not going to happen. We want it all. We want this. We want that. We don't want to pay a little bit toward our health care. We don't want to pay. So they said, we can't afford to keep these things. However, there may be some light at the end of the tunnel.
There is?
There might be.
Yeah, we'll be importing them from China with formaldehyde in the whipped cream.
Mexico, a baking company called Grupo Bimbo. Bimbo.
Oh, my God. You're not going to bait me into that
Grupo
one.
Grupo Bimbo. I mean.
You know, there's a reason. I don't often drink beer, but when I do, it sure as heck ain't Dos Equis. You know what they used to say about that stuff?
No.
About the Mexicans working in the breweries.
Okay, we won't. Okay, yeah. All right, now I know. Okay, but anyway, so they are eyeing Hostess. They're taking
okay. Them. Okay, so now we got to pay an import tax on Twinkies. So now instead of $1.99 a box, they're going to be $4.99 a box. And you know what? The schmoes will buy it.
Yeah, they will.
The schmoes will buy it, and I you know what?
Another piece of Americana goes into the history books.
And I haven't had a Twinkie in probably 35 years.
Really? I haven't had a Twinkie, I think, in about 5 years.
I haven't. I'm telling you, if I had to guess, the last time I had a Twinkie, it literally went into, you know, the Wawa and bought a Twinkie and ate it, was probably... What's this, 2011? Yeah, probably about 30. 2012. Yeah, look at me. No wonder my facts are screwy on the different wars. Yeah, probably about 35 years ago.
Okay.
And I probably walked into that Wawa at 2 o'clock in the morning, probably well over 0.01.
Yes, that's your limitations. Okay.
Yeah. But then again, you know, you got to remember, 35 years ago, you could pull over to the side of the road, throw your keys on the dashboard, and sleep it off.
That's true. You know? You could. That's true.
Nowadays, you can't. But, you know, the worst thing a police officer would do to you in those days is check to make sure you were still breathing.
Alive,
you
yes.
were. If you were, he got back in his squad car and left.
You know,
the universal symbol was you threw your keys up on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sleeping it off. I know better. I'm not going to hurt nobody or myself. I'm just sleeping off. And he'd check and make sure you were still breathing, and he'd go away. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, sorry, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
But, but another thing, you know, the Twinkies, whether they come from China, whether they come from Mexico, and it's a piece of Americana, and this and the other thing, it's all smoke. It's all blue smoke and mirrors for the fact that some union official decided that 100% was better than 8% because it's a bigger number.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And with that, folks.
Now, are we going to go right into another cast? Or are we done for today?
What?
Are we going to record another one? Oh, no, it's Sunday. Barry's got to get to his. Okay.
Aww.
Okay. I'm just trying to decide. Listen, just a shameless self. Ooh, you know, listen to me talk. You can tell I've only been up for a couple hours. Shameless self-promotion. Babies, keep your eyes on the prize. We're going to be doing our very own little podcast, the wife and I. Little mini casts to try and help keep you safe in these questionable days. Watch this space. Little shameless plug, heritage.org, get your copy of the Constitution, and if you can't get one there, oathkeepers.com.
.org.
.org, I'm sorry. There is a .com, but it's only for members. join, and you'll be able to get .com to .net, all of it. 10 orders we will not obey, and every single one of them goes directly to the Constitution of the United States of America. What do you think of that?
I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I do too. And again, it's not a bunch of wackos out in the woods with fatigue pants on, and it's not a bunch of, you know, it's nonpartisan, so it's not a bunch of right-wing loonies and left-wing loonies. It's a perfectly natural, legitimate extension of the Constitution of the United States of America. And with that note, Amory, I know you want to thank some people.
Me? No, I'm just teasing. Sorry. Sorry. Today's one of those days, folks. Listen, we're coming into the holiday season. Thanksgiving is next week. This week, excuse me. Hope everybody here and abroad, all of our military, wish you all were with your families, but please be safe. Enjoy the turkeys that I know you all will be having. I hope the head turkey doesn't come and make an appearance, because that did we get that one, Barry? Okay. That you will have a very good Thanksgiving. Please know that we are all thinking about you. God keep you safe.
Yes, indeed. And I wish you were all home with your families, because Lord knows what you're doing over there is coming to a little bit less than it should.
Yes.
And boys and girls, please make a statement. Stay home and relax on Black Friday.
Yeah, or you know what? There's a lot of little local shops, small business people that could
people you know.
Yes, people you know, people, local people that could use your business. Instead of being trampled on by 285-pound women who are 4'11", okay?
Hey, that's my grandmother.
That is not. Our grandmothers were never that heavy. Believe me, they weren't. As much as they say. No, seriously. You know, instead of getting out there in the real rat race, go to your local stores, because I know I am. Black Friday, a friend of mine, we are going to hit all the little boutique shops and everything and pick up a lot of stuff. We're going to support them. If you can, at least do a round there, you know?
And at least buy American.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, heck, I buy all my ammunition locally.
Hey, yeah.
All my guns, I buy locally.
So look, everybody, you have all have a blessed Thanksgiving. Let's start this again. We'll be back with you soon, hopefully in one piece and with my my jaw lubricated enough. And attached to my brain, okay? So God bless you all. God bless America.
God bless the United States of America.
Samson, speak. Good boy.